More than 100,000 people were evacuated from Afghanistan this fall after the Taliban retook control of the country. A small percentage of those refugees will be placed in Vermont, between around 100 to 200 so far. Organizations that work with refugees and asylum seekers are scrambling to get ready for their arrival, collecting donations, finding host families, and searching for longer-term affordable housing in the state. Now, while most refugees and asylum seekers coming to Vermont typically land in Chittenden County, there's a growing number going to southern Vermont. A national organization that works with refugees, the Ethiopian Community Development Council, will open an office there in Brattleboro next week. Today on Vermont Edition, we are joined by the new director of that office, Joe Wea. Joe, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We're also joined today by Emila Mirzanovic, director of the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants in Vermont. Hi, Emila.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And last but not least, we also have with us Kate Parlberg-Quam. She's the executive director of the Community Asylum Seekers Project in Brattleboro. Hi, Kate.
Thanks, Michaela. Nice to be here.
Now, Emila, can you tell us just a broad overview of the status of the Afghan refugee resettlement program? How many people are coming to Vermont and when are they set to arrive?
Yes. USCRI Vermont has submitted a proposal to welcome 100 Afghans to Vermont under the humanitarian parole designation. Currently, we are in the process of what's called assuring cases and getting ready to welcome them to Vermont. We were all very excited and really looking forward to welcoming first Afghans to the state.
Okay. So around 100 coming through your program. And then, Joe, can you tell me, your office has also submitted an application to help more Afghan refugees come to the state. Is that correct?
Correct. Our projection for fiscal year March, November 2021 to September 2022 is for the APA program, which is the Afghan placement program, is projected at 100. But between November 1 and March of 2022, for the Afghan the resettlement projection within that 100 is 25.
Okay, so an additional 25 people.
No, it's part of the 100 projection.
Okay.
So, 75 from March 2022 to September 2022 projection, and then 25 from November 1 to March 2022.
Okay, I see. Now, Emila, can you put these numbers in perspective for us? How does the size of Vermont's resettlement program, the number of Afghan refugees coming to the state specifically, compare to other states?
Yes. So I would say we are probably among the states that are preparing to welcome fewer number of Afghans. And that's primarily due to the fact that there isn't an existing Afghan community in Vermont. Most Afghans, as is the case with other refugee groups or immigrant groups, will want to go to communities where there are, you know, existing Afghan communities. I think it's important to keep in mind that this is not the first time that Vermont is welcoming a new group to the state. And, it will take some time, for us to get to the, the numbers that Joe and I just stated. But we are hopeful that we will welcome, every single one of them and more.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much choice do refugees have in terms of where they are placed once they arrive in the United States?
Refugees are, in general, asked to indicate whether they have relatives or friends in the United States, and they are matched with their relatives. So the goal of refugee resettlement program is certainly family unification. So that is partially why we're not seeing as many Afghans coming to Vermont as perhaps some of the other states. But we have, you know, in the past 2 months, we have heard from, you know, Vermonters around the state who either were, you know, deployed to Afghanistan or worked in Afghanistan or have contacts with Afghans and who have and have been working with them to help them come to Vermont.
Okay. Now, Kate, your organization works specifically with asylum seekers. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, the Community Asylum Seekers Project is a small nonprofit in Brattleboro that formed in 2016. And since then, we have supported 20 asylum seekers. So we do a lot of the same things that the refugee resettlement agencies do, just for a slightly different population. We provide housing, legal aid, financial support, community connections, language learning, job placement, school enrollment, all that stuff. And so I think our role, you know, we've been working with Joe and with the Ethiopian Community Development Council to, you know, just sort of integrate the ECDC into the existing field of support that exists for folks. We also work with a network up and down the state of similar organizations. We have organizations here in Brattleboro, a new one in Bennington, Burlington, St. Johnsbury, Randolph, Rutland, Montpelier, Middlebury, the Upper Valley, and Keene, New Hampshire. And altogether, we have resettled more than 60 asylum seekers in the last 5 years in Vermont. So,
now, Joe, you are clearly in a very busy time. This new office is scheduled to open, I believe, next Friday. So what is your day-to-day like right now, trying to set up this, you know, new organization here in Vermont and also prepare to welcome these families?
Oh, thank you for that question. So right now, our process, kind of setting up the office. So that means recruiting staff, finding a location. We're working with CAPS to share an office space. The opening is next Friday, as you mentioned. I'm also reaching out to community providers and community stakeholders. I've been having meetings with state officials, congressional delegations, town officials, service providers, you know, volunteers. And so I've been reaching out to everyone that's going to be part of this process, housing providers as well. So that has been my day to day. And then and also as well as, you know, working on the projection as to what we should expect coming in. Well, I also want to add a point to, sure, to what Amelia has said. Those, the projections we have submitted have to be ensured, as Amelia said, meaning it has to be approved. And then refugees have the right to accept that they want to come to Vermont. So even though this is projection, that number could be decreased as well as it could be increased. So we until the case reach us and we ensure that case, then we'll be able to know the exact figure that is coming. But these projections are figures we think that can come to the state, but that doesn't mean that those numbers will come as we projected them. It could increase or decrease.
Okay, so essentially they are offered a place here in Vermont, and then these people or families can decide whether or not they would like to kind of accept that offer and move up to Vermont. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. Okay. And also, as Amelia said, 80% of the Afghan refugees have some U.S. ties, so they choose to go there. We expect that the 20% that does not have U.S. tie, our projected figures may come from that figure because they do not have U.S. ties, so they could choose Vermont as a place to come. Mm-hmm. But we don't know of sure at this time until the request is made. And then the case is ensured.
Okay. Now, Amelia, historically, most refugees and asylum seekers who come to Vermont end up living in Chittenden County, close in or close to Burlington. And I'm curious how that might be shifting or changing right now. Do you still feel like most are in the Chittenden County region or expanding to other parts of the state?
Thank you for that question. Yes, historically, our primary resettlement area has been Chittenden County, so Burlington-Winooski area. And that is where we have resettled the highest number of refugees over our 40-year history. However, we have resettled refugees, different refugee groups across the state, so including in Addison County, Washington County, and most recently in Rutland County. So again, with rebuilding of the refugee resettlement program, it's important for me to mention that in addition to 100 Afghans that we have proposed, we've also proposed to welcome 300 refugees from other parts of the world. So we are looking to rebuild refugee resettlement program in the coming year. And some of those families, and in particular Afghans, will be looking to place them in outside of Chittenden County, namely in Rutland region, so south western Vermont and central Vermont. Okay. And we're working with community groups and volunteers and our partners in those parts of the state.
Okay. Let's go to the phones now with Lynn in Burlington. Lynn, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I'm listening to the show, and just before this segment on Afghans, we were talking about the plight of our own Vermont homeless. And how the last thing I remember is that the comment was, there just is no affordable housing available, not enough. And then the story comes with 100 new families coming in the next year from, from Afghanistan. And and I just don't understand how we can take 100 new families seeking homes when we don't already have enough for our own homeless, if you understand me.
Lynn, I think that's a really interesting point you bring up around affordable housing, clearly a major issue in this state. Kate, I'm curious what your take is on Lynn's question, since you've been working in this space for about 5 years now, and I know that finding housing is a big part of your job.
It is, yeah. Thank you, Lynn, for that good question. I think it's a lot on a lot of folks' minds right now. We absolutely have a housing crisis in Vermont, Southern Vermont in particular. I can't speak to how it is in Burlington, but down here we just don't have the housing stock. I don't think that the arrival of refugees and the continued resettlement of asylum seekers is a spark for that fire. I think it's a spotlight. I think that, we have a problem in that the state has not been able to provide the housing necessary for the working class to survive and thrive in this state. And I think that if we can make use of refugee resettlement to make that clear to our elected officials that we need more investment and work on housing stock, I think everybody can benefit because everybody deserves a place to live. Absolutely, the unhoused population deserves a place to live. So do asylum seekers, so do refugees from Afghanistan and elsewhere.
Now, Joe, if you're willing, I'd love to hear a bit more of your personal experiences. You yourself moved here to Vermont, and I'd love to hear what it was like for you to adjust to living here in the state.
Oh, thank you. So I moved to Vermont in 2012 as a graduate student. And since after I graduated from the SIT, I made up my mind to stay in Vermont. Even though I left a few months, stay somewhere else, and then missed Vermont and came back. My experience in Vermont has been positive in general. And that was the reason that brought me back. And there are quite a number of factors. Vermont is one of the work, at least south in Vermont I've been living, it's one of the welcoming communities that I've lived, and people are generally good, welcoming, friendly. And in my opinion, as someone who is integrating, starting life at fresh, Vermont is a good place to begin because of the welcoming environment. People are willing to help you. People are willing to listen to you. People are willing to give you the second chance. So that made me feel that, you know, as Vermonters, this is a place, our state is a place that new arrivals can begin their lives. You can make life of yourself in Vermont in my experience, even though there are challenges like everywhere else. But if you remain focused, Vermont will help you become who you want to be. And my story is part of that testimony. And so it's been positive, even with some of the social political discussion we hear across our country. Vermont has been a place, we have our differences, but at least we handle those differences. We talk to each other. We don't get into each other's faces. We handle our differences. And I think that those factors, as well as, you know, opportunity of employment, skills development, makes Vermont a place to begin. So that's my experience integrating in Vermont. And I think I am positioned so well, being here before and now taking on this job to help new arrivals, being that link between new arrivals and our community, so that they too will learn from my experience, as well as community partners, to make their integration a more successful process.
And Joe, where did you move from? Where were you born?
So I was born in Liberia. Liberia is a small West African country, western part of Africa, about a population of 6 million people. So we have had our own terrible 14 years of conflict during my upbringing. And so I'm aware of what it means to be a refugee, because myself, you know, lived as a refugee in neighboring Ivory Coast. And then after, you know, graduating from high school and college, and then, you know, moved to East Africa before I moved to the United States. So I understand the pressure and the challenges refugees face, because I lived that experience before. And I think Vermont is a place for them to begin. And I'm more confident than ever that our community will be, you know, a place that will really help folks that are coming. I think, I mean, let me speak to that, since she's been doing it at something, I mean, nothing part of Vermont, that, you know, Vermont is a better place for people to begin their lives.
Now, Joe, and then Kate, I would love to hear about how your two organizations work together and kind of try to create that social safety net that you've described a bit by working with different community partners and stakeholders. Joe, let's start with you. Who are the people that you are reaching out to in the Brattleboro area right now to make sure that this resettlement program is one that feels welcome and sustainable in the community?
So I have been reaching out to cross, you know, section of people. I have reached out to the town of Brattleboro. I went to the Rotary Club. I went to, you know, met with SIT. I will be going to churches. I will also be going to, you know, meeting with state offices. I already had a discussion with ESD. I will also, you know, be meeting with volunteers. We met with volunteers. Our model here in Southern Vermont, from the ECDC program perspective, is using a model called a co-sponsorship programming. And our co-sponsorship programming is, we are organizing community members between 7 to 10 individuals who come together as a group with a leadership to help us provide some of the core services that refugees need. And the reason we're using this model is we feel that after the, you know, 90 days period intensive service provision to refugees that have arrived, but refugees' connection with community members, community teams, it will be a more sustaining process, and that will help the integration process as a whole. So those are some of the models we're trying to use. With CAPS, we have so much in common in terms of support to new arrivals. The little difference is they focus on asylum seekers, and we focus on refugees as a whole. So we think that working closely with CAPS, where because they have so much experience in the legal process, providing legal support to some of the folks that will be coming will be a very crucial part of our integration process.
I also want to pose this question to Kate. And Kate, you've been working in this area since 2016, I believe, which is the same year that there was a lot of, you know, extremely heated debate over Syrian refugees arriving in Rutland. And I'm curious perhaps how that experience is informing your work and the way in which you reach out to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I wasn't here yet in 2016, but one of our partner organizations is called Bridge to Rutland. They resettle asylum seekers up in Rutland. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their folks were involved in that debate in 2016. And you know, I'm sure that there were many, many factors. My understanding is that to the community, some of the process felt rushed. And so I think what's working well in Brattleboro, first of all, is that we have CASP here, having done this work since 2016. So it's a familiar process to folks. And similar to what Joe was describing, we organize teams of volunteers around each asylum-seeking family so that people have someone to call when they need, you know, a trip to the doctor or the grocery store, you know, registering kids in school. We have volunteers who help with that. But that also creates kind of a culture of that support in the community. And I think what Joe is doing really well here in Brattleboro is reaching out systematically early in open and consultative processes with, you know, everybody who has questions about this process. And so I don't think necessarily that Brattleboro is any way, you know, qualitatively better than Rutland. You know, Rutland is doing this work too. I think it's a different time in US history. And I think that, you know, we have stakeholders who are engaged from the very beginning.
Right. Let's go now to Karen in Jacksonville. Karen, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, what a thrilling program this is. I'm just delighted to hear that Joe is heading up ECDC's office. Such a wonderful, experienced, kind person. And I am looking forward to becoming a host family for the emergency phase, or the first phase when refugees arrive, until they have a chance to be settled and so forth. So just wonderful that Vermont Edition is doing this program. I'm so excited for Vermont as well as for the refugees that we're at this point.
Well, Karen, your energy is palpable. Can I ask what made you decide to want to be to host a family?
Yes, I've been involved with refugee humanitarian issues for about 50 years. But I was just so excited when the governor said ready, willing, and able, and then ECDC decided to open their office here. So I've been involved in many parts of the world doing humanitarian relief work in all continents, but not here in Vermont. So this is just such a wonderful development for our state, our country, and for the world.
And Karen, one more question before we go back to our panel. For folks who might be listening and, you know, thinking about becoming a host to a family or a new arrival, or trying to figure out a way to welcome them to our state, what would your advice be?
Get in touch with Joe. Get in touch with the Refugee Resettlement, because they will be orienting new welcoming families with special cultural orientation, as well as the logistics of hosting a family. And so everybody can feel prepared, and everybody will understand that this is just for a certain period of time, maybe some weeks or a month or so. And then as more permanent housing, work, schooling can be arranged by ECDC and the other organizations that are partnering so effectively together.
Now, Joe, Karen brought up a point about this idea of all these supports that that new arrivals need. You've been through this experience yourself in some ways, and you've also worked with so many people who arrive here needing supports from, you know, housing to financial literacy. So they, you know, eventually go out on their own. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those sort of immediate needs are that refugees face when they arrive, and how you're trying to provide those?
So we have some core services that we provide. And so when refugees arrive, the decency and sanitary housing will be one, access to food and food allowance and appropriate seasonal clothing. assistance in applying for cash and medical assistance, you know, assistance in accessing healthcare, and support to access transportation system, you know, assistance with registering for salary services. These are some of the services folks will need when they arrive. And I, you know, this is why we think that a sustaining process, like working with community members like Karen, is a more sustaining process, because we feel that, community members get involved in a process. We want a community-driven process, and they will continue to provide these services to folks as, you know, the 90 days period is over. So I want to use this time to thank Karen and the folks out there. We have had so much support in Southern Vermont of volunteers calling us. For those listening across this our state, if you want to volunteer, please go onto the Ethiopian Development Council website, and then go to our volunteer website. Click on that and register. Feel free to indicate that you want to volunteer in Brattleboro area, and we will reach out to you as soon as possible. We encourage people to form their little group of 7 to 10, and then we can support you, train you. If you want to be a host family, if you want to provide transportation and mentorship, please feel free to do that, because our new arrivals will need that. I have experienced it, and I think this is our welcoming community, and people are really, really willing to help, and we really appreciate your support.
Right. Now, Amila, we've been talking a bit about the supports that refugees need when they're arriving in the community, but can you tell us what the federal and the state government do to provide support, particularly financial support, to people when they arrive here?
That's a great question, Michaela. So refugee resettlement is a public-private partnership. So the voluntary agencies, which USCRI and ECDC are one of, there are 9 voluntary agencies, have a contract with Department of State, Bureau for Populations, Refugees and Migration to resettle refugees in the United States. The PRM, that arm of the Department of State, oversees what's known as the Reception and Placement Program, which is the first 30 to 90 days in the United States. Through this program, all refugees, including Afghans, will be getting $1,125 per person, one-time payment. These funds are used to, you know, set up an apartment, rent an apartment, you know, initial food, utilities, cell phone, and like basic, to meet the, you know, basic needs to get someone set up and started in the United States. During those first 30 to 90 days is when the most intensive services take place. So, you know, we consider ourselves to be a one-stop shop. We are, you know, services, our work starts before someone even arrives here. You know, as Joe mentioned, we connect with volunteers and community organizations and our, you know, partners in the community and other service providers. And also, in addition to case management, we provide employment support, transitional cash assistance. We also connect new arrivals with, you know, various services in the community, school registration, health, and other supports. The federal government we contract with the federal government to provide transitional cash assistance. This is a very short term cash assistance from between 5 to 8 months. What's really important for me to stress is that refugee resettlement is an employment program. It's an early economic self-sufficiency program through employment. All refugees and Afghans will be employment eligible. So the focus will be to help them get jobs as quickly as possible so they can become independent as quickly as possible and take care of themselves and their families. Just to circle back quickly, if I can, for a second, Michaela, sure. Around housing, mm-hmm. This relates to employment as well. So again, refugee program is an employment program, early self-sufficiency through employment. So, you know, even though I absolutely agree, we have a housing crisis in the state, but refugees and including Afghan parolees will be going to work as quickly as possible.
Well, I want to ask, I think, Joe, about that. Now, you know, you said, Emila, that people will be going to work as quickly as possible. But at the same time, these are people who are dealing with pretty unspeakable trauma, post-traumatic stress, and just came back from a war zone. So I can't imagine that it's an easy transition to go from that experience to, you know, working a 9-to-5 job somewhere. So, Joe, how do you sort of fill that gap or help people access mental health services so that they can address what they've been through?
Yeah, so part of our role is that's why we're reaching out to service providers that are mental health service providers to, you know, be prepared to have their services available to folks. We are so conscious of the cultural orientation because you know, the way mental health services we perceive it, refugees may not perceive it the same way we perceive it. So how do we, from both the refugees and as well as the providers, and understand how to engage with each other to be able to provide services? So we are aware of that. The second point I want to make is refugees are very, and I mean, let me speak to that, very strong group of people, very, very skilled group of people. I was opportune to have gone to the airport during my training to meet some of the folks from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed with how skilled and, you know, they are, you know, English. I was surprised of the level of English people were really speaking. And so the transitional period, I'm more confident that these folks that are coming, and once the necessary tools are provided to them, they will transition very quickly in terms of employment. We're reaching out to employers to see how we translate some of the, you know, flyers and some of the employment, you know, documents into it, the required the language that people will understand. So to your point about the mental health, navigating that process, we really, really have that on our radar, and we're reaching out to mental health providers in our area here and trying to bring them together so that we all get prepared and see how we link up new arrivals to mental health services.
Now, Kate, I believe that you also have an event coming up pretty soon that could provide more information on how people could help new arrivals. Can you tell us a bit about it?
I will, yeah. And I also want to make sure we have a chance to talk about the legal needs of the state in supporting humanitarian parolees. So let me mention the event first.
Sure.
This Sunday at 1:00, CASP, along with USCRI and the Vermont Humanities Council, are hosting a free online workshop or webinar with Dr. Noah Coburn, who is a Bennington College anthropologist who works in Afghanistan, along with Ismail Hakimi, who is an SIV holder from Afghanistan, who came here several years ago on a special
immigrant. And so what is an SIV holder?
It's a special immigrant visa, which is a small percentage of Afghans who are likely to arrive in the next couple of months will have SIVs. But, you know, he has experienced resettlement from Afghanistan recently and is going to speak to us a little bit about what to expect for that process. And folks can learn more about that event and sign up for it at caspvt.org/refugees. That's CASP, like Community Asylum Seekers Project, vt.org/refugees. And we'd love to have folks there.
Thank you. And then before we break briefly, would love to hear a bit about the legal needs that these folks are facing that you try to help out with.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important to say that we keep referring to Afghan evacuees as refugees, and that's just for ease of language. But these are people whom the government has not decided to grant refugee status. The majority of folks arriving from Afghanistan will be arriving through something called the Humanitarian Parole Program, which does not grant them the same citizenship benefits or residency benefits as refugees. And unless there are major changes at the federal level that give these folks a direct route to permanent residency, that means most of them in about a year will be seeking asylum. From our experience, supporting people who are seeking asylum, you need an attorney to file for asylum. claims that are filed without the support of an attorney are far less likely to be successful. And we have paltry few immigration attorneys in Vermont, even fewer who can take pro bono or what's called low bono or low cost work. So part of our role is to help rally the community, state, and federal resources required to offer this comprehensive support. It's not just housing that's a primary need, it's lawyers, right? We are flooded with people who want to offer winter coats right now, and winter coats are great and necessary, but they are not the only kind of protection that people need. So it's crucially important that the resources be allocated for legal aid at this particular moment.
Kate Parlberg-Quam is the executive director of the Community Asylum Seekers Project in Brattleboro. We are also joined today by Joe Wea, the director of the new Ethiopian Community Development Council's office in Brattleboro, and Emila Mirzanovic, director of the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants in Vermont.